I'm Jason Schreier.
I'm Kirk Hamilton.
And I'm Maddie Myers.
And I have a secret to reveal to the two of you. I'm actually the power broker.
What?
Didn't it blow your minds?
Oh my gosh.
That would be a more satisfying character narrative than what we saw.
Oh my goodness, coming out punchy already, Jason.
The whole time I kept making all those mysterious phone calls. That's because I'm the power broker. That's what
you're
was.
Brokering power, and by power I mean superpowers and access to power. Great character name.
Thank you for supporting our show and listening to our Beanscast. Here we are. Crack open some an ice cold seltzer and listen to us spoil some beans.
Yeah.
That's right. We're spoiling the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe, which I guess we have to say in order to spoil The Falcon and the Winter Soldier and WandaVision, because those shows themselves encompass the entirety of the MCU. And so, yeah, this is the MCU Beans cast. But mostly, I think we're going to talk about the TV shows, starting with Falcon and the Winter Soldier. So this show... just aired in March and April of this year. It's 6 episodes. We all watched it. I feel like I already got a little preview of what you two think about it. But Jason, why don't you tell me what you thought about this television show?
Maddie, my favorite part was on the final episode when they called him Captain Falcon. I bet you were like, oh my God, I can't believe they did.
That was pretty funny, actually, when there was like a passerby on the street who called him Captain Falcon. I thought of myself and my own tendency to call the Falcon Captain Falcon.
Isn't it funny? Total tangent, but isn't it funny that people know Captain Falcon, but only from Smash Brothers? Because it's not like anyone out there is like, oh yeah, F-Zero, love Captain Falcon from that. Like maybe some hardcore Nintendo fans
out there will write in and tell us that's their thing.
But most people who know Captain Falcon just know him as like the guy who screams in Smash Brothers, which is so funny. Mm-hmm. It's like just a thing. But anyway, Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Man, I had mixed feelings about this. I really liked it at first. And I really liked it up until the finale. And the finale was so disappointing in so many different ways that it kind of ruined the whole show for me.
Wow.
I guess I should talk about
you're really hot and cold, Jason.
I am. I'm a person of I'm a man of extremes.
Whole show ruined by that. You kind of let finales ruin things for you.
It's kind of Jason's fault. Great point.
It is. Yeah. I'm going to blame you for your feelings.
I feel like the ending of a piece of media is the most important part. And
the conclusion, I guess that's what we were just talking about in the most recent episode.
Yeah,
you got to stick to that.
As a storyteller, it bugs me when like an ending isn't satisfying or like kind of cheapens things that came behind it. But you know what?
And it tends to point to underlying problems with the story.
It does. But come to think of it, I didn't like the end of Lost, but season 1 and 2 are still pretty amazing. But that's a whole another point. Anyway, broad thoughts. I really like Sam and Bucky. I think they have good chemistry. I enjoyed seeing them. I thought John Walker also, fake Captain America, was just a great performance and like great work. Zemo was a highlight, but like they tried to cram so much into this, including I think what are just kind of I think most people would see as the low points, which are the Sharon Carter storyline and the Flag Smashers, who really made no sense and whose goals were completely unclear. Carly Morgenthau I thought was an atrocious character, and I really didn't like the performance by Erin Kellyman. Unfortunately, I know some people did, but I thought she was really weak and was really the weak link of the story, especially considering how many good villains there are, such as Zemo, who had some amazing appearances in this show. I thought the ending was just so weak and so like centrist and like toothless that it just really did not sit right with me. Sam's speech at the end was just so dull and lame. I heard one thing that I will share is that I read somewhere on the internet that there was a big rumor that the Flag Smasher's original plan was to unleash a virus and like cause a pandemic, and that had to be totally scrapped and rewritten, which might have led to why it felt so incoherent and inconsistent. But yeah, overall, I was just kind of like left wondering what they were trying to do and what the show was really trying to say, because it didn't really feel like it said anything substantial, and I kind of wished it had, especially after seeing something as like revolutionary as Watchmen. Those are my overall thoughts.
Okay, great.
A lot of thoughts.
Kirk, what about you?
Yeah, I thought, I was pretty mixed on it. Trending negative toward the end. I was just sort of not really feeling it. I like admired its ambitions. I think it was trying for some things that were really cool. There were scenes that, like, it was clear that the MCU in general, like the whatever Feige and the other people running Marvel have made the decision to embrace more diverse creators and try to say more meaningful social things with their shows. And that's definitely true, but it was such a muddle and it was trying to do so much that it was hard to follow. And really, I think the show was just let down by kind of lackluster world building in a lot of ways that I guess we can talk about. But I think that was actually a big overarching problem, was the world building of the show, which I think just it relates to the fact that it's beholden to the MCU in that same way that WandaVision was, and they always have to come home to Marvel. Mm-hmm. And so in the end, it had that same problem where, like, you just can't get too far outside of that main Marvel line. You can't go too far. You can't get too radical. So that was sort of the like narrative, the problem why the narrative felt so unsatisfying. But I do think that, like, if the world building had just been more interesting, that would have really made the show work a lot better for me. And instead, it was just very underbaked.
I feel like the end was like an episode of The West Wing, where instead of looking around at systemic problems and saying, how do we dismantle this stuff so it doesn't happen again? It was just like, here's a fun speech that will change the bad guy's mind and he'll stay in power. Like, these senators who were pieces of shit will stay in power, but they will be magically convinced to change their minds and do the right thing. And suddenly Sam is Captain America. So he's embracing the system that has been that destroyed Isaiah Bradley for no reason. And
yeah, but don't worry, because Isaiah Bradley's actually totally fine with it. So, like, an episode prior, he wasn't.
Yeah,
cool
well, he
with
gets
it.
A statue. A statue makes up for all that torture. It's like, hey, but you get a gold statue. So, well, 40 years in prison. You know what? Well, you got a statue. So, hey, that makes up for it.
Maddie, what'd you think of it?
Yeah, I was pretty up and down on it. I didn't feel like the finale ruined it for me. It was more like I was up and down on the show the entire time. Like, there would be a moment that I'd be like, oh, this moment's really working for me. And then the next scene, I'd be like, why is this even here? What is this? Mm-hmm. And I feel like just watching the show really showed me the ways that a television show can fail, for lack of a better way to put it.
I completely get what you mean.
Oh, this is so interesting. Like, why am I not enjoying this part, but I was enjoying that other part? Like, just from a structural standpoint, that's compelling to me to think about. I actually didn't mind the Flag Smasher actress, Erin Kellyman. I thought she was pretty good, but she felt like she was from a different show. And I felt that way about a lot of the characters. Like, it felt like all of them were from different shows, and then here they were together all on this show. And there were a whole lot of them. And yet, I didn't really care about any of the conflicts as a result, because there was so much going on. And sometimes there'd be like these really long scenes where just two characters would be talking to one another, and I'd be like, wow, I don't care what they're saying. Like, Sam and Bucky would just talk to each other for a really long time about something, and I'd be like, well, I don't know if anything was really revealed there about either one of those guys. And then, like, something else would happen and there'd be a really long fight scene. I don't know. I was kind of disappointed. However, so I did think Carl Lumbly was really compelling as Isaiah Bradley. I thought that whole storyline was haunting and sad and kind of shocking to include in a Marvel storyline. And I thought it had a lot of promise and it was daring in ways that I wouldn't have expected it to be. And then it was just totally pulled punches at the end. And I was like, okay, well, then I don't know what the show is. I guess it's a centrist Marvel show.
But Maddie, he got a statue.
You're right. What am I saying? He got a statue. What am I saying?
Yeah, I thought that storyline as well was great. And it was like a sandwich almost. It was introduced at the beginning and then dropped entirely for most of the show and brought back, which comes to that. The thing that we've all said is that the show just felt so busy, so crammed with stuff that some of the good ideas just weren't developed enough. And then some of the things that they included didn't make sense. Like, the whole thing with the power broker and Sharon Carter and all of that, like, even the way they revealed the twist just felt like it was so half-baked. Like, it just wasn't built up in a way that was even delivered like they thought we were going to be surprised by it, because it was so not surprising when it happened. And it was like, you spent a lot of time on this. We spent a long time with Zemo. Like, we spent a long time trying to tie together different ideas across these characters, like Zemo talking about, are you a supremacist?
Yeah.
Do you believe? And I was like
that
okay,
theme kept coming up, and I was like,
what does that mean?
What does that mean though in the context of this?
It was fun that they went to the evil place, and like then Sharon got to do a John Wick.
Very cyberpunk, very Night City.
They were definitely like, we watched John Wick 3 and we want to do John Wick.
Did you know that one of the writers of John Wick worked on this show? Did you know that?
I'm not surprised. Like, it literally is John Wick 3. Like, it's like when all the assassins get text messages. Yeah,
they were like, can we get someone from John Wick to work on this show? And then they did. And that's exactly what happened. So, yeah.
It was, I will say the show, I've been talking about good violence on the regular show. This show had a lot of violence, but I didn't love the violence. It was like kind of shockingly violent at times in ways that I thought didn't really work for me. Like, I like John Wick. I like movies that, I like The Raid. Like, I like movies where it's like bone-crunching fights. But this was just kind of weird. It was weird that it was on Disney Plus. It started with that Sharon Carter scene where she's like shooting all these guys. And I was like, this is pretty violent, even for the Captain America universe, which is the part of the MCU where Black Widow and, you know, there's secret agents and people mm-hmm. are shooting at one another. I mean, the Winter Soldier was a very violent character. Mm-hmm. But it didn't, there's just something about it that I was like, okay, they're really going for the violence thing. But I didn't really fully get why in the end, I guess. Like, it's like the tone of the show didn't fully support it. Like,
There was some cool stuff, like Falcon using his wings to like jab out and take out enemies. I think part of it is that Falcon and Bucky haven't gotten a lot of action in the movies, so it's like, hey, time for them to show off what they can do in action scenes.
Yeah, there's some of those aerial fight scenes are pretty cool with Falcon flying around. Like, those are fun to watch.
So this is very much the show. I mean, this show literally exists so they could announce Captain America 4 and make it be clearly Falcon. Like, it's a bridge show for between Avengers Endgame and Captain America 4. And it's so disappointing. Like, literally the day that the finale came out, Captain America 4 was announced through the Hollywood trades. And Sam Wilson will obviously start.
Yeah. But what's weird about that is that I never really felt like I understood Sam's arc throughout the show. Like, nominally, that's who the lead of the show is. And the fact that he doesn't want to take the shield at the beginning of the show is notable. And then, of course, it causes all these problems. And he regrets not taking it because fake Captain America has it for a while. And then he ultimately decides to take it, even though Isaiah Bradley's like, hey, you know, structural oppression exists. Maybe you shouldn't take the shield with stars and stripes on it because, like, American imperialism is kind of bad.
Yeah.
And Sam at the end is just kind of like, yeah, so I thought about that and I've decided I'm going to take it. And I was like, why? Like, I genuinely didn't feel like they finished his storyline there. Like, they didn't really give me a good reason why he should take it other than that Captain America 4 is about to come out.
Well, and that speech, that fucking speech, which was just like such nonsense. Yeah, it's very much, it's like he this whole show, the reason I remember texting with Kirk, like, Kirk, I remember telling you I was excited about this because, like, from the very beginning, it's examining systemic racism in the same sort of way that Watchmen did. And I was like, man, this is so cool.
In the same sort of way.
At the beginning, it was like playing with these themes, and I was kind of optimistic that it would do something interesting. The way that WandaVision did some really interesting things with grief and explored those in ways that MCU movies have not, and I was hoping this would do the same sort of thing with systemic racism. And like, he's getting denied a bank loan, he's getting racially profiled in Baltimore by cops, and so much of it is like, it felt like it was building up towards an ending where he breaks the shield in half and is like, I'm going to fight for you guys, but like, I'm going to dismantle this system of oppression and start something totally new. And like, that's, if this was not Marvel, if this was not like a money-making machine that relies on new Captain America movies, and if this could be something that is like innovative and new, and he could build something brand new from the ashes of like this fucked up system, it would be such a more satisfying ending and make so much more sense with like all the things that Sam learned over the course of the show. Like, it really makes no sense that any person would just like go through what he went through and just like decide, you know what, I'm gonna forget all that and just put on this cool suit.
There's an issue. There's just like a clarity of vision that's lacking. And I think Watchmen is a really useful counterpoint just because that show succeeds on every single level. Like, this is one of the best shows I've ever seen. And it succeeds on every level in part because it, for one reason, it doesn't have to be an MCU show. Like, they can be so audacious and like blow things up and just completely, you know, end in this like radical way and go in these wild different directions and like be super like violent and really real and super true about what they're talking about. And in this show, it just has that feeling of like, it was surprising. The scene where he's racially profiled by the cops, I was like, well, I like that I'm seeing this. Like, this is not the kind of thing I've ever seen in an MCU show before. I mean, even Black Panther, like they discuss American racism in Black Panther, but that's about Wakandan politics and then how that relates to the rest of the world. So really seeing it in a show, that was cool to see because that's like an important thing that everyone in the world is talking about and should be talking about. But like you said, it like it was just one part of this bigger piece that just lacked that vision, especially compared to something like Watchmen, where you watch that and it's like, this has is like drowning in vision, like it's nothing but vision. And
well, the last MCU show was nothing but vision.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Well, it's nothing but Wanda, technically.
It was on WandaVision. I want to talk about the world building thing a little bit because I know I mentioned that, but I'm curious what you two think. And it actually ties into Watchmen as well. So I think the world building on Watchmen is incredible. Like watching that show where they just so quickly establish both this very strange world that they show you enough of it to understand that the world has really changed. And I won't get too into it since I'm sure some people haven't seen Watchmen and this isn't a Watchmen Beans cast, but like
people should check it out.
It's amazing. Yeah, you should watch it. But like you get a really strong sense.
And we should do a Watchmen Beans cast
of this. That'd be fun. We kind of did, right? Back in the split screen.
Yeah, I guess.
Anyways,
so.
You get a really strong sense of the world, but you also like, you don't see everything that teases you with stuff. There's just weird shit going on, especially in the first episode, which I rewatched recently. Like, it's so tantalizing. It just sucks you in and you're like, this is so wild. There's this world where this crazy thing happened. It's like squid fell from the sky. Like, the whole world changed and yet it's kind of the same and it's just bent in this way. And then they use that as the premise for the whole show and it's so perfectly executed. This show has the same premise. Like, it could work the same. It could be just like The Leftovers, another show that I know you and I really love, that has the same kind of a premise where 50% of the world was snapped out of existence and then came back. And that there are moments in this show, really near the beginning, there's a moment in WandaVision where they show everybody de-snapping yeah. back into existence. That was another like really tantalizing view of this world where this thing happened worldwide and changed everything. And like, you could world build so much cool shit around the Thanos snap and the missing 5 years and everything and all of these conflicts that have arisen from that. The whole world fell apart and rebuilt itself. And now what happens when everyone comes back? And that question, completely unanswered by this show. Like, it mm-hmm. sits at the outside of the frame in every single shot, and it's never focused on by the camera. Like, I was so frustrated by the end. Like, you saying, actually, Jason, that there was maybe a different Flag Smasher's motivation that they had to change does make sense.
It does.
Something went wrong, because their motivation doesn't make sense. I didn't even understand what the problem was. Like, they were like, there's refugee camps now because people came back, but they... people had taken their houses, so they didn't have anywhere to live. So now the problem, I guess, is that they're moving the people from the refugee camps back into their countries. But then the people who were... it's so confusing. Like, it's just
it really
not
makes
at
no
all
sense.
Clear.
Yeah, which that and would then, be a huge ordeal to move them all back. I mean, that would be wildly expensive. And then it's also like, well, I guess that's what's being purported is about to happen. And like, yeah, that would be bad if you had to suddenly move all these people back to the countries where they haven't been living for years and years. Where would they go? I mean, I think that's supposed to be the conflict. But again, it's not explained at all.
No.
And because it's not explained, you end up sympathizing with Carly more because you're like, well, yeah, this sounds really stupid. Why not just let the refugees stay where they are? And then, of course, she does the Marvel villain thing where she starts killing people, and it's not really clear why she does that either.
Yeah, it's right. like, yeah, it's right. preposterous. Yeah.
And so there's a version of this story, especially when you get into the new Captain America, John Walker. There's this scene where it's like in the second episode, they're in a truck together. It's like right before, I think it's before that kind of truck fight where they're on the trucks fighting. Mm-hmm. And it's like
the truck fight,
the truck
we all
fight
know
where
it.
They're on the trucks fighting.
Yeah.
And there's a scene where they're talking and he kind of like alludes to the fact that there's just a like, loose government holding everything together, and there's mm-hmm. kind of no order, and it's like chaos out there, so we've yeah. got to impose order. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. Like, what yeah. if that's the case? Like, there kind of isn't a government, so it's just these like kind of, you know, authoritarian like shock troops are coming in to just sort of smash people and keep them in place, and he's mm-hmm. gonna sort of become the leader of that yeah. as like eventually when he becomes US agent. I was like, oh, that would be cool. And then, you know, Bucky and Sam have to go against that, and it becomes mm-hmm. this whole like trying to fight for power. And but that wasn't the case at all. And like in the next scene, he's just on Good Morning America at like an NFL game, and everything seems normal. And that, anyways, I've said my piece about the world building, but it really fell short, and I was very disappointed by it.
Yeah. So I want to yeah. talk about a couple of things that I did like, actually. One being Baron Zemo, just because he's that actor is so good.
And it's a fun character.
Daniel Brühl.
It's just a great character. He's such a good character for not having superpowers.
I mean, they rewrote his character, though.
Yeah, that's what I mean. The new version of him is fun. Like, though they
totally
changed
different guy.
Him.
Different guy, yeah. fun villain. Fun, completely different villain from the other villain he
yeah,
was.
Yeah, I guess it's a different guy. It makes sense
it's
to
a
me
guy.
That like it makes sense to me that he would be more... like that if you think of his Yeah, yeah, yeah. Totally different guy. Totally
he's just different a different guy. Like, he was like just this family man, like, you know, guy. In
he was like mourning his family in Sokovia or whatever, and he hated superheroes for that reason.
Yeah, he wasn't evil Bruce Wayne.
He's like a flamboyant. Well, now cool he's guy a rich.
Yeah, now he's an Elon Musk.
Hates superheroes again, still, but for slightly different reasons. Sure.
Yes, I liked Julia Louise Dreyfus. Popping up, and she's clearly gonna be like this new
Madame Hydra. Yeah.
So I don't know anything about the comics, but it seems clear to me that she's going to be like.
I mean, spoilers for decades old comics, I guess. But yeah, she will probably become Madame Hydra.
It seems clear to me that she's going to be an arch villain type, like Nick Fury for the enemies, like collecting like anti hero or US agent and like other like evil types.
Villains.
And Nick Fury is a really great comparison because Samuel L. Jackson has the same ability as Julia Louis-Dreyfus, where he just has so much character as Samuel L. Jackson, just like she does, that when she walks in and starts talking, it doesn't matter what her lines are. It doesn't matter who her character is. I'm just like totally on board because she rules. Yep. And like she made, her scenes were great. And I loved that she showed up.
I've been rewatching Seinfeld with my wife and it's incredible. And seeing her, like she just steals the show the entire time.
Yeah, bringing that Veep energy.
Also still feels like it's from a different show though. Like the Julia Louis-Dreyfus stuff, I'm like, this U.S. agent plotline is like campy and interesting, and the Baron Zemo stuff kind of goes with that campy version. I would say even the Sharon Carter stuff does. Like all of that feels like a sort of, you know, Madripoor set spy thriller where everybody's like,
they should have made, you know, that
going
show
to nightclubs together.
Flag smasher
but
bullshit.
It doesn't have anything to do with the Sam and Bucky like serious trauma, like male friendship, like fixing a boat together and then also feeling bad about America. Like that doesn't really have anything to do with the other half of
and
what
you
I
mentioned
described.
The trauma. You mentioned Bucky's trauma, which is like, it's wild that he's even in this show in a way because it was so cut out of the show, which is like, fair enough. That's a lot to cover between the things you just talked about, like the Zemo stuff, the Sharon stuff, and Sam stuff, which is Sam stuff is obviously like the most like charged and interesting storyline. That's really what the show was about. And then also Bucky's thing of like, you know, dealing with who he used to be, which is like, that's interesting too. But they barely dealt with it. And then they just kind of put a bow on it in the end.
Yeah. Well, I don't understand that. Like at the end, it's like he's gone from therapy. He crossed off his whole list. And it's like, when did we actually see these dots connect of like him resolving stuff?
He kind of did.
And he just told the guy that he killed his son. And then it's fine, I guess. It was just very unsatisfying.
I mean, I guess you could argue that like he finally found a connection with Sam's family or something like that. But like, I don't know. It's very difficult to.
He's gonna hook up with Sam's sister, and it's
all good. Totally. Oh my god, that's gonna be a running plot line in Captain America.
They
4.
Were cute together. I mean, that was cute.
It's
that
cute. Happened. Yeah. It's
sure.
Good.
Whatever. It felt so random. It's like, why is anything happening ever on this show? It also seemed to me, it almost seemed like an insecurity. Like they didn't think Sam Wilson could carry the show on his own. So they like threw in 16 other characters and plot lines or something. It's like, why isn't the show just about Sam? It's called The Falcon and the Winter Soldier because they need to have Sebastian Stan in there to like make sure that there's another person there, even though he barely has any time to do his storyline.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense in that they're both just dealing with the grief of not having Steve Rogers around anymore.
Kind of, but like, then why have all these other characters in
there? And it's true. No, I mean, Bucky saying, I guess the way that to read the show is at the very beginning when they're in therapy together, Bucky is like, if he's wrong about you, then he's wrong about me. And the way
great,
to see it is
great
that,
scene,
like,
great line. That was good.
Yeah. Well, the way to interpret that is that like by Sam taking up the mantle, it meant that Steve was right about him. So that means Bucky can be redeemed. Also, I guess you could read it that way. That is just like the cascading effects of Steve's wisdom trickling down there.
Yeah. And there's definitely like just I could feel gears turning when I was watching their chemistry and their banter, just because, you know, there's the whole story that
they're good together. The two actors have great chemistry, like you
said. And there's the whole story of them in the back of the car in Civil War, and then like that one little scene between them.
It's like 17 seconds that sold this show.
And you can see that, and then they even reference it on the show, which was cute, but it's all a little like, okay, and now we're gonna fucking banter the shit out of this. Like in the second episode when they get together, they're immediately just, he's like, go left, no, you go left, what's the plan, I'm going left, like you went right, and there's so much of that stuff, which is, it's fine, it's cute, and I could see the gears turning. I felt like I was like, okay, and now they're making them banter because we really like them together, and it's like just kind of for its own sake.
the stuff about Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit. Yeah, well, so it's interesting. When I watched WandaVision, as soon as I finished WandaVision, I was like, I want to watch every single MCU movie where these two appear because I have grown to love these characters now. When I finished watching this show, I was just like, okay, whatever. Like, I had no desire to see Sam and Bucky and other stuff the way that I really wanted to see more of Wanda and Vision. And that is kind of a feeling. That's the big failing of the show, I think, is that it just doesn't, because it's such a mess and so, like, disorganized and has so many running plot lines, it just doesn't it doesn't make the viewer care as much as WandaVision does.
I can't, it's funny, it really sounds like we're bagging on the show, though I had a fine time watching it. Like, I'm, you know, we're focusing on the criticisms, but
yeah, well, even the worst Marvel stuff is fun to watch.
Yeah. I guess we don't need to say that, people can take it. But another thing that I will point out, and I think we should, this is kind of, we can segue a little into WandaVision, because I do think that WandaVision was much more successful, though it had its problems at the end too, and still suffered from that need to stay in the MCU lane. It was a better show. It was more interesting. It was more cohesive, and it had better music. And I do think that was a major problem for Falcon and the Winter Soldier, was the music. Henry Jackman, he's a good composer. Like, he's done some scores that I really like. The music was just a snore every time the credits came on. It was just that, like, it's like, dun, 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 I mean, dun, 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 what even was what was the theme? There was kind of a theme, but, like, there wasn't really, where WandaVision was doing all that clever stuff. They were, like, rewriting it for all the different shows. Like, there was a musical heart to the show that I really think, like, connected. It made the show feel much more like it had a heart, where this show, it was just, like, chugga-chugga, percussive hits, nothing. Like, that music just never...
Well, that's a perfect metaphor for both of these shows.
Yeah, it really was kind of a big part. It, like, stood in for the difference between the two.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about WandaVision. Do you guys want to get into WandaVision?
Sure, let's talk a little Wanda.
I mean, I think it would be fun to talk about it, yeah. So, I guess we did some big takes on WandaVision at the time, but do you two want to give some spoilerific takes, like some talk, big picture talk about the ending and how it made you feel? Because I don't feel like we got to do that on the main show. So, Jason, why don't you go first?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think, I loved WandaVision up until Wanda got to totally, like, escape from consequences in the show. Made no attempt to like make it seem like she had done anything wrong, despite the fact that she brainwashed all these people and ruined their lives. But the chemistry between Wanda and Vision is so good that, like, it made me care about this robot and witch who fell in love. And it was never, the relationship was so trivial in the MCU movies and the Avengers movies that, like, I was pretty skeptical going into it that they could make it work, but they really made it work. And they, like, created this really believable relationship between these two characters, and especially the way they kind of structured it was strange, but the fact that, like, episode 8, the second to last episode, was the background episode that explained really all why these characters love each other and why their relationship matters. Ultimately, I think it worked, even though it made the first 7 episodes a little bit like, wait, why are these two in love again? But, like, it really, it did work towards the end. And yeah, I mean, I think that, like the Randall Park and Kat Dennings, and it's just, like, nonstop. Every single side character in this, as opposed to Falcon and Winter Soldier, was just, like, standout and made sense. And, like, the stories really worked. Monica Rambeau was awesome. And it just really felt like a coherent show that had a really strong vision, so to speak, and worked as a really, even though it had 2 visions at the end, which maybe is why the end
might have been the one end too kind many of, visions at the end. Yeah.
Yeah, there was a little too much vision at the end, which maybe is why it kind of fell apart.
It turned into a real who's on first situation.
It also left so many dangling threads. Like, I could really not care less about what Sharon Carter is going to do in the next MCU property, but I really want
to
know.
She's going to sell weapons to people.
Yeah, God. Oh, my God. Oh, I'm going to get government secrets. Yeah, congrats, Sharon. You did it. You can sell government secrets now. What an amazing twist. Versus the end of WandaVision. Well, the two ends of WandaVision, where I was like, oh shit, I want to see more of Monica and the aliens, and then I want to see what Wanda is doing with her new astral projection powers. So there was, like, so much cool dangling stuff from that, and I really liked it. I really liked WandaVision.
Yeah, how about you, Kirk?
I think that the two shows are kind of interesting to compare to one another, as they're the two sort of first two efforts of Marvel to make TV shows, and they're both one-offs. It seems like they've both been described as one-offs. So there's kind of this thing that Marvel is doing right now where they're releasing these longer series that then have way longer than a given MCU movie to explore side characters and relationships between characters and sort of bridge the gaps between the last, you know, pre-Endgame, the whatever they call it, you know, Generation 1.
Phase 3 and 11. Phase 4.
Yeah, right. Alpha, Omega, Bravo.
Yeah.
But like that, the whole Endgame era and whatever comes next, which is probably going to be interesting. Like, I think the next Marvel movies sound like they're going to be interesting. More directors of color, more interesting stories, like more diverse everything, kind of. Like, they're stretching out and that's cool. And the shows feel like a bridge between what the MCU used to be and what the MCU is becoming. And I think that we'll get probably more into this in our broader MCU discussion. And I think they both had similar problems in some ways, in that I think the best episode of both shows was probably the second to last one. That's definitely true of WandaVision. That second to last episode, the flashback episode, was wonderful. I mentioned this on the main episode, but when we talked about it back on the in the main feed, but I'm just a sucker for like scenes of people finding meaning in pop culture, like when she was watching TV in her bombed, like war-torn city, and like that just gets me. And it was really beautiful the way that, you know, it tied back to all of the things that she created for herself. Like, that's just, that's lovely stuff. Like, and it was really well done, and it was part of this like coherent idea for the show. Mm-hmm. And it was the best episode because it just took the time to take us there, and they laid all this groundwork. And I thought the second to last episode of Falcon and Winter Soldier was also the strongest because it slowed way down. It was like long conversations with just like Sam
boat
talking
building.
To people, and like Sam and Bucky, yeah, boat building, just sitting there talking about like what it means to be Captain America. Does he want to do this? Like the big question of the show. And they finally took their time. And it's the thing that both shows kind of didn't do that much of. And I kind of wish that they'd done more of, which is take their time more. Like, I think that the cool thing about MCU movie, the MCU going to TV, is that suddenly they have 8 hours, you know, 6 hours to tell a story that's just connecting the thread between these big 2 hour, 2.5 hour movies. And they can take their time. And those were the best episodes. And then they both had weak finales for the same reason. And it's because after all that relaxing, all those interesting questions, the time with the characters, they had to get things back on the rail and like get back in franchise mode and set up whatever's coming next. And I think whenever that happens, you're reminded, oh yeah, of like all the limitations, the way that the MCU can just feel small in this certain way and feels more and more small to me as time goes on. And I like consider them as movies and like just realize that they're all kind of flat and they all kind of look the same and they all adhere to a formula. And even the exceptions kind of underline how it's just all kind of a little bit flat. And is this just going to be the world forever? Like, and that starts to make me kind of sad. And that's where both shows kind of ended up in a certain way, even WandaVision.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of true. I think part of why the finales both don't work is because the characters can't fundamentally change. I mean, that's basically the point that you're making. But you know that Sam has to become Captain America. And you also know that Wanda's still Scarlet Witch. So it's not like they can have her change or be confronted in a way that's going to significantly change what her arc is. I know you complained about this on the main show, Jason, where you felt like she didn't face consequences, but it's interesting because most of WandaVision is actually showing you haunting images of the people who are being brainwashed by Wanda. And the final episode includes like a horror show sequence where people are like walking towards her slowly and being like, you've brainwashed us. Like, if that's not emotional consequences for the viewer, at least to understand that what Wanda did was very wrong, I don't know what else is. I think that is the show condemning her in a certain way. It's just that then she gets to walk away and get to be in Doctor Strange.
But the show very specifically has Monica Rambeau look at her and say, they'll never know what you did for them. Like, which totally absolves her.
I don't know why they did this to Monica Rambeau. I feel like that's the other thing about it is like, I don't know. I wish Monica Rambeau had her own show. It's similar to the issue that I have with Falcon and the Winter Soldier, where I'm like, well, there's some interesting characters here and some interesting pieces here, but like, I don't know why they chose this combination of characters to be here. And like, they're kind of making it work, but you can see the gears turning and you're like, okay, sure. Like, Monica Rambeau and Wanda Maximoff don't really hang out in the comics, but they both have really cool stories. So we're just going to put them next to each other and we're going to say it works because it works now. And like, that's fine, I guess. But yeah, it feels weird. I think the other strength of WandaVision, at least for me, is just that it really played with the TV show format and that actually worked. And Falcon and Winter Soldier didn't have that conceit. And so I guess that is part of why it didn't work for me. But it could have been a good TV show without playing with the format, but like WandaVision was actually just a good TV show, which is not something that I necessarily expected Marvel to be able to do because they make movies. And I was like, I wonder if they're going to be able to make a TV show. And I do feel like WandaVision showed that they could.
I think that, there's really something to that. And it is true that, of course, WandaVision was a TV, it was like a meta joke about TV shows, which is a great way to start your TV career if you're the MCU. Like, that's very clever. But if you take that out of it, like the specifics out of it, what that show did that TV shows that are good do is that each week it like gave you a little bit more of a mystery for a long time. And it was such a fun mystery for the first, really for most of the season. And and that's a, that's what TV shows are really good at, because like a serialized thing, you, it can hold back information. It can show you a little bit. It can give you the week to kind of try to tease out what's going on. There were all these fan theories about the guy in the bee suit, and is he this guy? And no, maybe he's actually that guy. And that was a lot of fun. And that's a fun way to engage with a show.
Like, who's the power broker? That really kept you guessing the whole time.
Well, so right. And then Falcon and the Winter Soldier, it was kind of just a big, long story told in chunks. It was a little bit more like, you know, Zack Snyder's Justice League or something, like part one, this episode.
It should have been a movie. Yeah, it felt like it should have been a movie. Like, kill some of those plot lines, remove a couple, remove the flag smashers, really. Just have it be about Captain America and, like, U.S.
Fake Captain
US
America. Yeah. That was the other thing. So, speaking of, you know, abandoning consequences and not facing them, like the fact that Sam and Bucky kept on fighting alongside U.S. Agent disturbed me so much more than anything that,
that was
happened
weird
in WandaVision.
When he came back,
and it was like weird to me that I didn't see a ton of Twitter call out posts about that. I was like, what is this show doing? Like, why does Sam and Bucky keep reluctantly being like, well, I guess we have to fight alongside this fake Captain America again? I was like, do you? Do you though? Because,
well, that's the same thing. To me, it makes perfect sense because these are people who have decided, instead of trying to break the system that is so like unjust, we are going to accept it and just participate in it. So of course they would work alongside him. The same reason that like Sam would be like, okay, Senator, I'm gonna work for you guys now. Like, it's it's preposterous. It's all ridiculous.
Well, and the same reason that Monica would offer this like one line absolution to Wanda, because like they need, in the end, they need to just let Wanda off the hook. Like, there's always, it's all part of that like return to normalcy. I agree though, Maddie. I don't know if they had to do that with John Walker. And like the scene where he shows up with his fake ass Captain America shield and fights alongside them, I was just like, what the fuck? At the beginning of this show, I thought this guy was going to be the villain. Like, I could not wait for him to get his ass kicked, because he's great at being this horrible dude that you want to see get his ass kicked. A cheese dick, as Emily called him. He's a real cheese dick.
And,
well, but then at the end, he's just kind of still a hero, and then he just slinks off and becomes U.S. agent. Yeah, agree that that was a huge, like, just tonal whiff.
Bizarre.
Like, they whiffed on that.
Yeah.
Oh, no, we're like, now we're bagging on
Falcon. Yeah, I know. Well, it's because, it's partly because I feel like WandaVision had so much more fun with the idea of who the hero and villain were. And I mean, you don't really know who the villain of the show is. Arguably, it's Grief. Arguably, it's Wanda, I would say. Mm-hmm. For better or worse, she makes a lot of mistakes. But then, of course, Agatha is also there to sort of counterbalance that and be the character who may or may not let you allow Wanda to get off scot-free, depending on how much you blame her. But I always took like the Agatha all along bit as a joke about how it's really not her, and it's like, actually, like, she does some things, but she doesn't do everything. But I guess it's open to interpretation as to whether
that's
interesting.
That's also just a casting thing, that like, if you can get Catherine Hahn on your show, like you're gonna be in good shape. Like, if they'd had Catherine Hahn on Falcon and the Winter Soldier, it would have been good. I mean, it's sort of similar to
Julia Louis-Dreyfus,
right?
But
great,
only for like a second
energy,
at the very
that's
end.
True.
Exactly.
That's true.
Like,
as opposed to Catherine Hahn being
there we
a
need
lot.
the Madame Hydra movie. Yeah. Madame Hydra, that would be an incredible movie.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess I'm just sad that the Falcon and Winter Soldier wasn't a better show. Like, Loki show looks really good to me, but I don't know what to think anymore. Like, now I'm like, do I trust Marvel to make a good television show or not? I feel like they made a pretty good show with WandaVision, but then kind of a weird one.
Well, it's different people, right? It's like different showrunners, different creative
directors. It's Kevin Feige
directors.
Exec producing all of them, though. So, like, on some level, it's his fingerprints.
But that just means that he does the overarching story. Like, the minutiae, the details are
up to the
showrunners.
You're not wrong.
Imagine.
You're not wrong.
But I mean, I think Kevin Feige's, he has the role roadmap of like, okay, this has to lead into Cap 4, but like the directors get to put the pieces together, and that's why, I mean, same with the movies, that's why some movies are better than others in the MCU.
So yeah, and I think that like it does partly depend on the sort of continent or the continent on the MCU globe that you're dealing with, because there's a funny, really funny bit in Falcon and the Winter Soldier where he's like, is it the big three, where it's like aliens, androids, or wizards, and they're kind of, there's this like meta joke about like the three types of enemies that they fight all the time, and it's like, you know, a lot of people have done these breakdowns of the sort of different universes of the MCU, and it's clear watching the movies, and I've watched the movies a lot of times too, and I'm sure you've probably noticed this if you watch them as well, Jason, if you've been rewatching them, is there are definitely movies that lend themselves a lot more to vision, to like a director's vision. I think the clearest example is Guardians and Guardians 2, which when I go back and watch Guardians 2 now, like that movie looks different than the other Marvel movies. The space stuff, the like cosmic space shit, that lends itself to really cool visual stuff. The magic stuff, Doctor Strange, and then I'm sure the next Doctor Strange with, and then WandaVision is kind of part of that too. That stuff really lends itself to like not just cool visual ideas, but like cool narrative ideas, people building new cosmic realities out of chaos magic that like twist reality and turn it into something else, and you can just go in whatever direction you want until the spell breaks and we come back to the MCU at the end, where the Captain America world has always been kind of the world of the gun. Like, it's the world of soldiers and armies and spies, and that can be fun. Like, I really like The Winter Soldier. That's a really cool movie. But it can be kind of limiting, and it really felt limiting here. So it kind of depends which sandbox they're playing in, like which sandbox each director is sort of allowed to mess around
in. Yeah, I feel like it felt limiting because they didn't do enough with it, because they had so many friggin' pieces to try to thread together.
Yeah, you can do, like I said, yeah, like there have been good Captain America stories in the MCU.
Yeah, and there could have been
but it is
really
partly the where you are.
Yeah. I wish they had done more with Madripoor. I would have liked to spend some more time there and explored some of that stuff. But it was just like, okay, got to get to the next plot beat. It just really, it was so many storylines.
Well, you know, you should watch the John Wick movies.
Yeah, one day.
I'm serious, actually. Like, it's a comic fantasy world that's basically Madripoor, but a lot more violent.
Totally random MCU thought. So I actually just watched a couple of movies that I missed for the first time. Ant-Man 2, which was great, as expected. Paul Rudd is just, I would watch him in anything. And Doctor Strange, which I thought was really interesting. I liked it. It was a good movie. But what I thought was so weird, having watched Avengers, Endgame and Infinity War before watching Doctor Strange, and having seen Doctor Strange in those movies, it's so weird how Doctor Strange just like goes from this bumbling like amateur sorcerer to all-knowing God in the Avengers movies. Like, we never actually see them connect those dots, which I thought was just a funny little thing. Like, he goes from like not knowing anything to suddenly becoming the Sorcerer Supreme, or like becoming this guy who can read every single timeline and figure out which one is the one in 14 million shot of like being the right one. It's just so strange to see that. And it reminded me of some of this other stuff we were talking about, where like sometimes this universe just doesn't connect the dots. And I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing. It's just an interesting thing.
It's tough, you know, like those Avengers movies have got to be one of the most challenging screenwriting challenges you could take on. Because like James Gunn's version of the Guardians of the Galaxy is like a very consistently written thing with these characters. And you've got to channel that energy. You know, the Russos, I guess, had to channel that energy. And they did an okay job, but it's, you know, sometimes it's more glaring than other times, but they're not always gonna nail it.
I think they did a good job. Those movies, I think, considering what they had to do, I thought were pretty
good. Yeah, of course. And it's a big challenge. But you do notice things like that when you go back and watch. Like Thor, it's the same thing. Like Taika Waititi had a really great take on Thor that's a little bit different than the Thor that's in the Avengers movies or even the other Thor movies.
I feel like I'd be fine with it if everything had a wildly different tone, though. Like if each show or each movie just continued to have a different tone. I guess it screws up the team-up movies, but I tend to enjoy those individual pieces so much more. And I mean, we're talking about the reason we enjoyed WandaVision more is because it has a cohesive, specific vision, and the vision is in it as well. And it fits
Hopefully
together.
Nobody is making this into a drinking game, or they're just wasted.
It fits together. Please don't play this drinking game. and it feels good to watch for that reason. Because, and then the reason the final episode feels so weird is because it feels like you're suddenly watching an Avengers movie or like a Final Fantasy fight or whatever, you know, pick your poison in terms of what those big sparkles mean to you. And then something like Captain America or Captain Falcon, whatever we want to call this other television show, at least it did feel kind of cohesive, but like more grimdark and more like the Winter Soldier movie. And so that fits into that world. But I feel like it'd be cool if it was wildly different. Like, what if they just made a version of the Falcons show that felt like The Wire or something? And they were just like, this is going to be a totally different tone and it's going to be set in Baltimore.
Well, that's what the comics do, right? It's like they embrace
yeah,
that.
Yeah, the comic books are like different people write different comic books and they feel super different. And yeah, it's the same character, but you just kind of have to be at peace with the fact that this character is going to be written differently, like have a literally different voice comic to comic. And yeah it's all canon, well, so quote unquote, but... not necessarily.
I think they are doing that with, this is a good segue, because Loki, the first trailer for Loki came out, and that looks like it's going to be totally drastically different than anything we've seen before, because it's like, it almost looks like a Monster of the Week show, where like Loki is sent on time adventures by Owen Wilson and has to go and set things right because he broke the universe.
I hope it is goofy and fun. I'm cautiously optimistic about it, but I'm also like, I don't know. One on, one off for me. So
Right. The way that WandaVision did the thing of really embracing being different, at least especially for the first half, was pretty cool. And it seems like Loki might do that, might not. I'm a little skeptical only because, yeah, Maddie, the thing you're describing, of course, is like, it's true to the source material. Like, the comics are so wildly different. I'm not a huge comic person, but ever since I read Matt Fraction's Hawkeye, I'm always talking about it because it's like...
good?
It's so good. And it's so its own speed and its own thing. And it's nothing like, I don't know, whoever else's, you know, take on the Avengers or on Iron Man or something. Like, each of those stories is so different. And the movies sometimes feel that way too. But... like the Feige part of it, the MCU part of it, is always kind of pushing against that in a certain way. Like that sort of weird, what's the word? It's a heterodoxy, that weird heterodoxy that the comics can have. The movies are always kind of pushing against it. And no matter what, they always kind of bring them back in. And so no matter how weird it gets, you do have somebody overseeing the whole thing, which isn't true in the comics, usually in a good way. Like, you know, that lets them be very different.
Part of why I feel like, I mean, Sam's costume at the end that is like so embarrassing is actually a costume from the comics. And it looks a lot better when it's a drawing. And that just kind of epitomizes to me one of the issues we're talking about, which is like, well, we have to put him in this costume because it's in the comics. And there must have been a moment where they put the costume on Anthony Mackie and they're like, well, he has a differently shaped head than the way that Sam Wilson is drawn in this comic book. And it looks kind of weird with Anthony Mackie's ears. should we stick with this? I guess we have to, because comic book fans are going to love this shit. So we're kind of stuck here and this is the costume. And then of course it got like dunked on Twitter like all day that day, where people were like, why do his ears, like, what is this? The goggles look stupid. But then if you look at the comic book drawing, it's like, oh well, yeah, that looks sick as hell, because like it's not a real human head, it's like a square jawed like comic book guy who looks good. And it's just like, I don't know, every now and then they have to cram these characters back into a certain idea. And I guess I'm saying, like, I think it's cool that the comic books are diverse in terms of like storylines and voices and what they can do, but they can also be super limiting, because it means that you have this subsection of fans who have certain expectations about where the story is going to go or what it is or isn't going to depict. And you feel like you need to cater to those people. And it also means that you can't ever change anything too much. Like, you can have these huge world changing events in the comic books and the movies, but like, also, you kind of can't have them be that world changing because you need the Avengers to get back together or whatever. And like, you know, you don't want to like keep Tony Stark dead or whatever the case may be, because like he's a popular character. So like, you know, it'll probably be fine later. Like, it has that like comic book inertia of like, yes, things can change a lot, but only because on the long tail, they will stay
the same.
You know?
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, it's interesting. Wow. I feel like Kevin Feige's MCU actually has so many like cool traits of a TV show, like the fact that you're seeing these characters come back and like evolve over time. And to your point, Maddie, yes, that's 100% true. But on a more micro level, we do see a lot of these characters change, like Iron Man and Cap and Steve and Spider-Man. And like, we've seen a lot of these
Iron Man
arcs.
most of all. He had the clearest arc across those movies.
Yeah, Iron Man, most of all. Yeah, he's changed so much from the beginning of the MCU to the end. And I think that, like, it almost seems like a shame that a TV show like Captain Falcon did not... like, it almost felt like it took too much from the movies. The MCU took all this good stuff from the TV world, and Captain Falcon didn't do that same thing. Like, instead, it was like, we have to have this, this, and this, this splashy fight scene, this narrative arc here, because that's how the movies did it. And that feels like a real missed opportunity to me. It just, yeah, it felt like so traditional MCU in so many ways.
I wonder how much of that is, like, the newness of this, of these Disney TV shows that are so in these world, these movie worlds. Because The Mandalorian also had this feeling of, I really like that show, so not making this like qualitative comparison, but The Mandalorian had that feeling when I was watching it of like, I am watching some fucking Star Wars right now. Like, there are just a lot of times you're watching that show, which we talked about on our Mandalorian Beans cast. Go back and listen to it if you haven't. But where it's like the visual effects and the production values and everything, the music, all of it, you're just like, wow, this is wild to watch a TV show, a non-Game of Thrones TV show, basically. But even considering Game of Thrones, that looks like this. And this has the same thing. The first episode of Captain Falcon, there's that fight scene in the helicopter with the Leaper guy. RIP to the Leaper, by the way. That guy got a raw deal. I love that dude. The like the guy who fought Captain America at the beginning of Winter Soldier on the aircraft carrier or whatever it was. That dude rules. That sucked that he just sort of went out the way he did. Anyways, you're watching that fight scene and it's like, wow, this is like really in wild production value, like aerial fight scene that you would see in a Marvel movie. And it's because it's so new that that feels cool, and probably partly why they're chasing it now. And I wonder if, or I maybe could hope that if they keep doing this, especially these kind of one-off TV shows that aren't part of a series but are just like in between movies the way that they seem to be doing right now, that they'll get away from that a little bit more and they won't need to feel the need to like wow people with that. I don't know. Maybe that's not going to happen because like Marvel movies always have to have some of that stuff.
I'm so optimistic about Loki after that first trailer that it's going to be weird and different and just feel like unlike anything else. And even WandaVision. Nice. I mean, look, for all the flaws of that finale, WandaVision as a show is so weird and different and unique.
Absolutely. And like, oh, yes. Oh, yeah. I agree.
Like, I think Marvel deserves a lot of credit for putting something on the air where like you have to get through three episodes before you have any idea what it's even going on. Like, you have to sit through sitcom tropes for a solid two episodes to like put up. And I think that like that's ballsy and risky, and like for all the flack the MCU gets for not taking risks and for being conservative, I do think that like it does actually take some big leaps and risks, and should be like praised for that.
I agree with that. I also think it's probably notable that at least both Kirk and I really liked it when The Mandalorian didn't overlap that much with the Star Wars universe. And I feel like we have a pretty similar opinion here, where like anytime you're getting bogged down in what the big tentpole movies are going to make you do or railroad you into doing, it just feels bad. Like it sucks to have to remember like, oh yeah, there's going to be a big thing coming out soon that I'm supposed to go see. Anytime I remember that, I don't like it, even though of course I'm still going to see it and like, whatever, I've just accepted my fate. But I prefer not to think about it and instead feel as though some cool secret or side story is being revealed to me each time. And I honestly don't think there would have ever been a movie about the Vision and Wanda Maximoff. I don't feel like they were popular enough as characters on their own to sell a movie. Whereas I think Sam Wilson actually would have been, and like they could have just put him in a Captain America movie and that would have been pretty cool. And like, I don't know if I feel that way about Bucky, apologies to Bucky, but like that's part of why I'm like, this is kind of weird. Like I feel like there could have been a version of this side story that was like an actual true side story and got a little weirder about the canon or the fringes of the MCU without needing to be railroaded back into the main movies as much.
So here's a thought that I've had about the MCU for a while, and it's that related to character arcs and which ones are interesting and who even has them. Honestly, the villains in the best Marvel movies are the characters who actually get character arcs, and they wind up having the more interesting stories compared to the heroes, because the heroes always have to get ready for the next sequel. The villain gets to die a lot of the time. And if there's a good villain, they get a good story. Killmonger is the obvious example. Michael B. Jordan was amazing in the role, but also it was a really well-written character with a really, really good conflict with Black Panther, with T'Challa. And yeah. like that conflict is like the most interesting conflict by far between any hero and villain in any MCU movie by like so much. Mm-hmm. And he gets this amazing death scene. It's like beautiful. It's super sad. It's like one of the most moving parts of the MCU. And it's all because like he's a great villain with a really clear point of view, and like he makes you understand where he's coming from. You sympathize with him. You don't really know how to feel about the conflict because you mm-hmm. kind of understand where they're both coming from. And then he dies and it's like really sad. That's like great. Josh Brolin was really good as Thanos. And Thanos's arc in Infinity War specifically is also, I think, a really good arc. Like
yes.
that's kind of what makes that movie good. I rewatched that not that long ago.
Although both of them commit genocide to make sure you know that you're supposed to root against that.
yeah. I mean, yeah, I guess Killmonger kind of does, or he starts a war.
Well, he like tries or he to, starts, but yeah.
I mean, he kills innocent people.
Yes, it's the Marvel thing, which you mentioned earlier, Maddie, where it's yeah. like, because it's the Marvel villain thing. But I mean, yes, okay. But like, and Thanos, obviously, yes, it's like, yeah, genocidal maniac. But yes. he has a good arc, and it's, he's like a character that you sort of
definitely
follow and understand his motivations.
You understand why he's doing what he's doing, right. even if you don't agree with his actions.
The villain, which makes sense just structurally, because the villains get to have a self-contained story that ends at the end of the movie, and so they get to do that full thing, similar to how Watchmen gets to have a self-contained story because it just ended. Like, they don't have to set up a sequel for these villains, so they get to do that, where the main characters are limited. An interesting thing about WandaVision is that the villain of WandaVision, as we've discussed, is kind of arguably Wanda herself, mm-hmm. and as long as that's the case, and until it sort of stops being the case with that one line and that one kind of cop-out at the very end, it's super interesting as well, because she has this arc happening and you're like, wow, like I understand why she's doing what she's doing. They're really making me feel for her. They're also making me see the pain she's causing to these people. And it's the same energy of like the villain being the most interesting arc. And they did it with the protagonist, which
I
may be wrong about this, but I don't think they've really ever done before. And that's really daring. Like, that's the kind of writing that they can start to work in maybe into some of these shows and even into some of these movies.
It seems like they're setting up, by the way, to get into a little prognostication. It seems like they're setting up for Wanda to be the actual villain in Doctor Strange 2, which is going to be connected to Wanda's story.
Perhaps. Wanda is in this one. She is in that. I don't know if she's a villain or not or anything, but
we'll find out. But I'm curious to hear, Maddie, from you, since we're heading towards the end of this spoiler cast.
Or I thought you were going to be, because since Kirk just went on this whole rant about villains.
No, well, I'm curious to hear from the comics expert about like some of these things, because I don't know anything about like the Madame Hydra or like the young Avengers, like Wanda's kids, or like
so that is the prognostication I would make.
Yeah, where's this stuff all headed based on the comics?
So based on the comics, Billy and Tommy are members of the Young Avengers. So of course, I'm assuming they're going to come back. Those are Wanda and Vision's like weird kids. In the comics, they get reincarnated according to like absurd comics logic. And I don't think they're going to do all that stuff in order to make it work in the MCU, because they usually try to simplify magic and stuff like that.
Well, they're doing like multiverse stuff. They're talking from another universe.
Yeah, so they'll just kind of take them from another universe and don't worry about it. And also Eli, who's Isaiah's kid in Falcon, is a young Avenger character as well.
Clearly going to come back based on what we saw of him.
Clearly going to come back. That I thought that actor had a lot of chemistry with Isaiah and Sam as well. I liked him a lot, even though he was barely in it. I thought he was good actor, so it's not surprising.
He'll definitely have to come back when someone kills Isaiah and he has to like avenge them.
In the comics, I think he gets a blood transfusion from Isaiah, and that's how he gets the powers, which kind of tracks with the way his powers work on this show. So I would predict that they would probably keep that. And you know, I'm down for some Young Avengers stuff. I think that would probably be a fun show. Bunch of teenagers hanging out,
refreshing to see
eventually. Yeah, it'd be different. It'd be really different. So I think that's fair to assume. I'm not really sure what they're going to do with U.S. Agent and Madame Hydra. I was honestly so annoyed that U.S. Agent even survived to the end of that show that it was kind of hard for me to be excited about that final scene, because I don't know. Madame Hydra stuff, that seems cool. I'm excited for Julia Louis-Dreyfus to like play a cornball villainess and like recruit people and I don't know, be twirl her mustache.
Is that what she does in the comics? I wasn't sure. It seemed she's
not the original Madam Hydra. That's like a title that multiple people have. And then I'm probably misremembering, but I think she like kills one of them to become it and gets her own.
She's like the Dread Pirate Roberts.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. I could be wrong about that, but I think that's one of the elements of her long backstory. So in this version, I think they'll just make her into Madam Hydra regular style as opposed to doing something more complex with it. But yeah, I don't know. John Walker's whole storyline, I was just like, okay, I guess they're going to continue with this guy.
It was funny when he was like psyched about his new costume, which looks like butt. Like it looks like something that you would like wipe your butt with. And I was like, he's like, yes.
I didn't understand that. It was just like, here's a generic ass like military outfit.
It was so terrible. Silly. I was like, you like that? All right. Yeah. Well, I mean, you're kind of a cheese dick. So I guess that's a cheese dick ass costume. I guess that's why you like it.
There's also like a lot of speculation about like different X-Men that might show up at various points. Like Madripoor is like usually an X-Men location, usually Wolverine's there.
But they threw us off with the X-Men with the Pietro thing, right? That was like totally a dead
end.
That's
true too. I mean, that's the other thing about it is like
that was just a little Easter egg.
Wanda and Pietro are normally, well, okay, I shouldn't even say normally, like way back when they were mutants, and then they retcon that in the comics so they're not anymore around the time of the Fox Disney split, where like Marvel didn't have access to the X-Men for a while. And so they did have Wanda and Pietro in the Marvel movies, but they weren't mutants. And in the comics as well, they were retconned to not be mutants anymore. And it was really stupid. At this point, I'm like, not sure what to expect. Like, I don't know if now that Marvel has the rights to the X-Men again, if they're going to be like, okay, yeah, Magneto is Wanda and Pietro's dad, because that is originally the canon there. But I don't know if they're going to bring that back in or if they're just going to abandon it entirely and be like, they're not mutants. Pietro has super speed for reasons. Don't worry about it. And leave it there.
Well, they gave us reasons in Avengers. Yeah,
he's like Ultron. Stands close to a magic box or something.
Yeah,
he stands nearby to an Infinity Stone.
Yeah, well, it's the Mind Stone that gave Wanda her powers. And yeah, him. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Him too, kind of.
Experiments and some shit.
Okay, so I have a question. This is a broad MCU question about where it's going, and just I have this overall sense of it, and I'm curious if the two of you share it or what you think. Is that there's just a great unfocusing that has been happening for the 13 years now that the MCU has been developing, where when you go back to the very beginning and you watch the first few movies, like then you watch the first Avengers movie, and what is it? It's like there hadn't even really been. There'd been two Iron Man movies, a Thor movie.
There was a Hulk movie that we try not to
Captain America. There was the other Hulk movie that doesn't actually
exist. Ed Norton
was
in it. It's fine. Don't worry about it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And then after that first Avengers movie. So that's like the most focused they were. And that was like the clearest example of this whole approach. And then it starts to kind of fragment. And then it really starts to fragment. And soon you just have like, that's kind of when Guardians of the Galaxy comes out. They're gone into space. There's like all this other stuff happening. And you start to be like, wow, how are they going to unite this into something? And then they do it. And it's maybe the most bananas thing anyone's ever done cinematically, to like bring together 1,000 characters and actors and whatever, like teams, to make this crazy thing that happens at the end of Endgame where they all come together. Mm-hmm. Okay, that now is, they've reached this point of diffusion where there's 1 billion characters. And now, if anything, all I sense from everything that's happening right now, and the fact that like Eternals is coming out, that they now have X-Men and maybe X-Men will come out, those are big team, like the Guardians, where there's like a bunch of different characters, and everything is kind of starting to revolve around big casts of like lots of people. There's a lot less sort of Spider-Man. He's kind of the only ones left, where like he gets his own movie and he's maybe supposed to be the new Iron Man. But a lot of those individual heroes are gone. Thor, I guess, is still around. There's just a feeling of increasing diffusion now, even more so, and like the TV shows and the movies and the bigger casts, and it's like getting more and more sprawling. Does that just mean, like, what does that mean for the future of this whole thing of the MCU?
I don't know if that's really true. I mean, we're getting a Spider-Man movie, a Doctor Strange movie, another Thor movie, Black Panther 2. I mean, obviously that has changed drastically, but like Captain Marvel 2 and New Ant-Man, a lot of these movies are like single
movies. But do you get the feeling that I'm talking about?
Well,
like,
I think
at this moment in time?
Well, I think what you're talking about is more that there isn't one ongoing story anymore. Like in the past, even from the very first Avengers, it was hinting at Thanos coming to town. And like every single movie was just kind of, even though they all had their own stories, you knew that like they were all taking baby steps towards the eventual arrival of Thanos and Avengers all getting together in Avengers 3 and 4, which is what they called them back then, and fighting off Thanos in this grand, and like they all were tied together by the Infinity Stones, which made all these appearances, all of them. And I think what you're describing now is more of a feeling of like, we don't know what the grand overarching plot is anymore. Maybe Madame Hydra is here. Yeah, or if there is one. Yeah, maybe Madame Hydra is going to appear and do that. And then I guess I see your point about like more group movies, but I think from what I've seen of like the slate of Phase 4, that's only a couple of like them are group movies as opposed to, or group TV shows, as opposed to things that are like She-Hulk and Miss Marvel and Moon Knight and the other ones I mentioned. I think a lot of them are still single hero stories.
So you think we're kind of in a liminal phase, but it's going to re-coalesce around something new?
Yeah, I mean, I think at some point, maybe it's Madame Hydra is like part of the bigger story, but I think at some point, maybe like at the end of Black Widow or something, they'll start hinting at like, this is going to be the next big overarching plot line, and that'll take another 5-6 years to get to.
What do you think of that, Maddie?
Maybe the next big overarching plot line is actually them trying to introduce the X-Men, because I know that isn't the phase that they're currently in, but it's the next phase. So right now they're just sprinkling in little bits and pieces of like that world, like the Madripoor stuff and, you know, other little Easter eggs. Like there's an X on a gate at one point. And like, I don't know. These are the things that X-Men fans cling to for dear life.
Right.
So it's like, I think they'll continue to sprinkle in references to that. And then like the shocking reveal would be like mutants exist, except it's not shocking because everybody remembers the X-Men movies. So I'm not really sure how that would work exactly, but I feel like that's something that they could build up to pretty easily. I get what you're saying though, Kirk, about like the splintering and then reforming of the various group movies. And like, maybe there is a future where you can be an MCU fan who only watches a couple shows, as opposed to the reality we're in now, where you kind of feel like you have to watch every single thing in order to get all of them. I think it would be nice if you only had to watch a few of them and you could just kind of be like, I'm just interested in these few characters and I don't need to know every single thing that happens in order to get the Infinity Stone plotline or whatever the heck it may
and like
be.
Just from a practical and logistical standpoint, they could wind up forced into that position just because it gets so big that no one could possibly wrangle it all into another Infinity War Endgame situation.
Well, the other problem with that is that like there, I don't know how many, I mean, I'm sure there are all almighty villains in the comics that are like stronger than Thanos or like on
there
par
are so
with
many.
Thanos. But after 10 years of leading up to Thanos and like all the training and all the different things that had to happen for the Avengers to finally beat him, the thought of having to go through that again is kind of exhausting. So maybe the ties will be a little bit looser between the next few movies, or maybe they'll do some surprising things to kind of have part of the overarching story. Maybe the overarching story of Phase 4 and beyond will be like different and smaller scale and won't be like leading towards some epic battle. Maybe it'll be more fragmented and more about character development. I don't know, but like, I'm very much looking forward to seeing how it all unfolds, because it's exciting. It's exciting after so many years of like knowing, okay, we're leading up to this. We're leading up to this. We're going to see Thanos. He's going to do it himself. He's going to collect the stones. It's exciting to be like, wow, we're in totally new territory here and we have no idea what the new overarching story is going to be. That's cool.
Yeah.
You know, and it really is very similar to where we're at with Star Wars right now, too, where after years of following this one trilogy or this non-trilogy or whatever.
No more Skywalkers. Please, no more Skywalkers.
Right. We're now sort of hey, maybe they can do all these different things.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So I'm optimistic, despite not loving Captain Falcon. So,
Disney is good, actually.
Yeah.
Is the conclusion of this episode.
Hired a lot of talented people, I guess. It's almost like they have billions of dollars.
Right.
I guess that's as good of a place to end it as any, really. I mean, we sound so optimistic. It's great. We did
The MCU, for all of the like the blockbuster problems it has and for all of the flack it gets, it is like, it has no right to be as good as it actually is.
I know. Like, even when Captain Falcon is bad, it's still pretty fucking good. You
That's
know what
the
I mean?
Thing. Like, when we analyze this stuff and we dissect this stuff, it's like we're holding it to a very, very high standard. Especially if you ever go back and like watch the older comic book movies or like the standards
now.
our standards now are extremely high and we're holding it to that. So like, yeah, Falcon and the Winter Soldier is better than like 90% of TV shows in the history of America. So like for us to be shitting on it is kind of like, okay, it's a little unfair at this point.
Like that on its own is kind of amazing.
The bar is so high. These Marvel movies are so like consistently entertaining and fun to watch that like that it's incredible that they managed to pull all this off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're fun movies. I mean, I just watch them all the time. Rewatched most.
They're
of
so good. Yeah, there's so much good stuff in there. Even when they're flat.
I rewatched Black Panther recently. Really recommend
Black Panther.
So
well, that's on another level. Film. Black Panther is on another level from the rest.
It is
of
on another level,
say. And it's
it
so
really
sad
is.
that Chadwick Boseman died.
Chadwick Boseman's
Yeah, what a bummer. But yeah, no, mm-hmm. I'm optimistic about the future of the MCU, and like I'm really excited about a lot of the stuff they have coming up. Like this year mm-hmm. alone, like Black Widow, Shang-Chi, like we mentioned before, and The Legend of the Ten Rings, Eternals, Spider-Man, the new Spider-Man, which is like gonna do some wild shit according to all the rumors.
I'm a little not sure what they're doing with Spider-Man, but we'll see.
Man, anything with like, yeah, that those movies have been good. Like the last two movies are really good. So yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I'm optimistic is what I'm saying.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. We'll watch them. We'll do a Beans cast.
What if this year there's a What If? You guys know about What If, the cartoons that are like hypothetical situation. Like what if this had gone differently in the MCU?
Yeah.
It's like literally a movie.
Right.
It's a show.
Yeah,
it's a Disney Plus show about the MCU. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's like all the storylines that they can't do. I will probably enjoy the heck out of that.
Definitely.
Anyway, this has been a Beans cast that wasn't sponsored by Disney, believe it or not.
It wasn't.
And so thanks so much. If you're a Max Fun member, we appreciate you. And
we do.
Hope you enjoyed the beans, folks.
Thanks for supporting us.
And hey, and enjoy the rest of Max Fun Drive.
Happy Max Fun Drive.
Happy Max Fun Drive. We're going to be doing some cool stuff. So hopefully we'll see you around.
Happy Max Fun Drive. And happy beans to you all.
Happy beans to you all. All right, I'll see you all soon.
See ya.
Bye.
Triple Click is produced by Jason Schreier, Maddie Myers, and me, Kirk Hamilton. I edit and mix the show and also wrote our theme music. Our show art is by Tom DJ. Some of the games and products we talked about on this episode may have been sent to us for free for review consideration. You can find a link to our ethics policy in the show notes. Triple Click is a proud member of the Maximum Fun Podcast Network, and if you're listening to this bonus episode, it means you're already a member, so thank you. We really appreciate your support. Find us on Twitter at TripleClickPod, send email to tripleclick@maximumfun.org, and find a link to our Discord in the show notes. Thanks for listening. See you next time.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.